Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Menapro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. Menapro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles, Pat Foreman. Today is Monday, September 26th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us right now in the live chicken chat room. You can talk with other Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the world. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guest when we have them on, not unlike today, where we welcome Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. He'll be taking your questions from the chat room and live on the air. We would like for you to take a moment to register. All you have to do is scroll down a little bit on your screen. Again, if you're listening live, scroll down a little bit on your computer screen. You'll see the chat room's automatically opened up. You're automatically in the chat room, but you're probably registered in there like a guest. Go ahead and take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, talk about all our hobby and passion, backyard poultry, show poultry, sustainable living, urban farming, urban gardening, preparedness, and a whole lot more. So come on, guests. Go ahead, click that register now button, register for a moment, and you can participate in the chat room. I would also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. Hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Menapro. Menapro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that Menapro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. Menapro, nurturing life. If you have experienced the disappointment of broken or weak eggshells, try Menapro's Oyster Shell. Adding oyster shell to your flock's feeding program helps provide the calcium they need for strong eggshells. So don't let those beautiful eggs go to waste. Try Menapro's Oyster Shell for your pullets and layers. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brinsea.com. Brinsea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinsea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea, technology you can trust.
Hey ladies, do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
You've ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size flock and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at MyAmishGoods.com. That's MyAmishGoods.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It's good to have you on this Monday, September the 26th. Hope you all had an absolutely fabulous weekend. Yeah, I know it's Monday. It's kind of a blah, blah. But no, because we have an awesome guest every single Monday here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor and founder of First State Vet Supply, will be here talking with us today and educating us more and more about our hobby of keeping backyard poultry. But of course, before we can even attempt to get to that, we must, as always, otherwise the show would just be ho-hum, blah, blah, yuck, yuck, boring, boring. We've got to welcome my wonderful co-host, poultry advocate and author of many great titles, Conflict yourself, and, hang on just a minute, Pat, don't say anything, and, on the tip of my tongue, it's on the tip of my tongue, hang on a minute, hang on, we're going to, I'm getting it, it's coming out of my brain, hang on, workshop extraordinaire, speaker extraordinaire, coming just back home from the Mother Earth News Fair in Pennsylvania, the one, the only, Pat Foreman. There we go, Pat. Now I had to finish that up real quick.
Thanks, Whisper. That was really sweet. Yeah, just come back. In fact, we're on Interstate 70 right now, headed back to Virginia. I'm here with Harvey Usry. He's driving, so my little Prius is getting a new driver here, and we're just tootling along down the road while we're on the radio. It's so cool. How are you doing? How was your weekend?
Oh, Pat, I'm glad you asked. My weekend was absolutely fabulous. Friday, we got some beautiful, beautiful rain on Thursday.
Nice.
So we did not plan on Friday, but I did get to Hera one more time. And then, man, our good friends, Christina and her kids, Bright and Laura, they got here Friday evening around supper time. And we had a great supper that night, great, great conversation. And then we were up early. We got up about 7 o'clock on Saturday morning, and we were out hitting the fields about between 7:30 and 8. And we didn't come back in. Of course, we broke for lunch. And then I had to run an errand to town, get a couple of things, and then get back. I didn't take but about an hour. But basically from 7 a.m. to about 8 p.m. that Saturday, we were planting our fall garden. It was awesome. It was just absolutely tremendous. We had lots of help, thank goodness. Brighton and Laura worked their little tails off, and my good friend and helper, Philip, he really worked hard. He worked the plow most of the day. And we seeded, and I mean, oh, my gosh, we put in so much stuff. We put in –
We ended up planting, and I was looking at it today based on another exact size of that lot that we planted. It's 0.83 acres. And other than a rim around that, it's a rectangle lot that's 0.83 acres. And really, other than a path that's probably about 10 feet wide that goes around the entire rectangle for my tractor so I can get around it or get the water barrels in there and whatnot, it is completely planted. So probably over about, or right at about 3/4 of an acre of our garden. And we did plant it by hand. We had a good old fat, and I got pictures. I'll post the link here in a minute to my personal Facebook page. You can go over and take a look at some homestead pictures and us getting in the garden. There were a few. And then, but yeah, we've got an old, in fact, I borrowed from my neighbor an old-fashioned plow by hand. It's got a round wheel in the front of it, and it's got the two wooden handles and the plow in the center. And yeah, it's awesome. So 3/4 of all day long. And it was absolutely a fabulous day, though. Don't kid yourself. We had a great time. And then I'm not a big fan of working on Sundays. You know, it's the Lord's Day, and it's a day to rest. But the crops need to go in. So we did just a little bit yesterday. Yesterday we put 4 more rows of peas in, and we did an area and one more big area of turnips. And then we called it a day, and we made 2 awesome, let me tell you, Pat, some awesome scarecrows. And I've had this idea for about 4 years.
Oh,
about how to
nice.
Really cool scarecrows. We made 2 of them. And I think Love for Poultry just put in the link to the old homestead, and so, or at least one picture to the old homestead there. And of the old wooden plow. So you can click on that link in the chat room, and it'll pop up. Now, I'll tell you, I did a few rows with that plow, but mostly we had our good friend Philip. He's in a lot better shape than the rest of us, and he did most of the plowing. And then we came back and dropped we did a little fertilization, and we did a little seeding, and then we had Brighton. He did a lot of covering up with that metal rake, covering it up. And let me see if I can actually get – here we go. Let me post another link in the chat room, and let me get back over here to the chat room. Oh, goodness, where'd it go? Hang on just a second, folks. Let me get back over here to the chat room, and I'll post another link so you can see all the pictures there in the homestead. And towards the very bottom, you'll see pictures of the garden going in and of our scarecrows. Let me get a link here specifically to the scarecrow, because we're very, very, very proud of that. I had this idea about 4 years ago of how to make really the perfect scarecrow. And I wanted to get – there it is. Yeah, they're both posted in the chat room. And what we did is what I wanted to do, Pat, is – and my total idea didn't completely work, but it's still some of the best-looking scarecrows I've ever seen. People are driving by going, oh, my gosh, that scarecrow is awesome. And what we did is we got some PVC pipe, okay? I got some 3-inch PVC pipe, 3-inch PVC pipe, and I cut those into 3-foot lengths. And what I did was I buried that part. I buried that part into the garden. And so it's like this long, a 3-inch, 3-foot deep, 3-inch wide cylinder going right into the ground. And I left it sticking out of the ground probably about 5 or 6 inches so dirt and sand and water doesn't flush down into it. Okay, and then so that was my sleeve to set the scarecrows down into. Okay, and my initial hopes was that by doing that, if we got some wind, that it would kind of move the scarecrow a little bit in that cylinder back and forth. But they ended up, after we stuffed them with hay, they ended up being a little too heavy. But got a couple of pairs of overalls out, got a couple of flannel shirts, got a big square bale of hay, got some pie pans, and we got and we made the. Hang on, let me see what it says. Yeah, it's a scarecrow named Ernest and Henry, and there's someone saying, "Hey, the scarecrows actually look like me." Yep, those are if those overalls look familiar, then that's what they are. I got a couple of older pairs of overalls and a couple of flannel shirts. But and then what we did was it's a Halloween season, so we went to the store, and for $1 we bought a pumpkin, you know, little pumpkin buckets the kids carry around to collect candy in, and we cut holes out of the bottom and slid them down the 2-inch. The scarecrow frame is made out of 2-inch PVC pipe, and it's basically a cross and almost like a crucifix, if you will, and you we made that and then put the pants on, the overalls and whatnot, and get all that good stuff. And then we used the pumpkin head, and then we got some straw hats and put on them. And I know you're on the road, Pat, but when you get back, you'll have to definitely take a look at the link there, because But in the garden, you can see our beautiful scarecrows and whatnot. But this morning, I had to go back to the farm store. I had to get I had to get some more seed. I needed to get another pound of turnip seed and another pound of some English peas, the green peas that we're going to put in. But the garden will be finished in today. Today about a 30% chance of rain, and so we wanted to especially the carrots look like they needed some rain, some water. So I've got 2 55-gallon drums, food grade plastic drums. 2 55-gallon drums. We put those in the very back of the old truck, and I filled those up with water, drove them down. That's why we have that whole ring all the way around the garden where we can drive the tractor, the truck, or whatever we need. And drove those down there and watered in the garden today with that. And the city's supposed to come by and see about putting us in a water meter there right at the road, right as it runs by the garden. So we won't have to pay sewer on it. We won't have to pay garbage or nothing, just strictly water. And so we can set up our irrigation pipes going out there to the garden. So hopefully the water guy will come by today and talk to us about putting in a water meter there. But other than that, we had a fabulous time. So later today, the whole garden will be in. Let's see, we planted, if I can go down the list, Pat, we planted some carrots. Too. We did carrots. We did broccoli. We did cauliflower. We did cabbage. We did lettuce. We did turnips. We did collards. We did mustards. We did peas. We did beets. And there may be something else that I'm forgetting, but
onions, garlic. No. I hope you put in some garlic.
We did garlic. We didn't do garlic or onions. Nope, I couldn't find any garlic at any of the farm stores around here. But it's a full 3/4 acres. It's maybe even a little more. Other than that little ring that goes around the garden for the truck and tractor. And it's awesome. Critter Lover said they talked about the city about putting in a water meter separate from the house. They said they were going to charge $3,000. No. If I was going to spend $3,000 or $4,000, I'd be putting in a well. It wouldn't be near that. The early estimates that I got from the city, I think, was going to be right at $500. So and still, you know, when I factor in my time of filling up these 55-gallon buckets and going down there and hand watering 3/4 of an acre, of course, the best way to do it is just pray to the Lord for rain, and that's what we will continue to do. But I think that would be a lifelong, as far as me and Jen spending until the day we die here, maybe a justification of our investment. So we'll talk to them about putting in the water meter for that. And then, of course, we'd love to have a well, but $3,000-$4,000 for a well, not right now. So very good. So it was a fabulous weekend. We had a great time, and the garden is in. I'm really satisfied about that, and I'm so proud of our scarecrows. I really am. And I got a 1 million candle power light, rechargeable light, and so I can any time during the night, if I wake up to get a glass of water, or I wake up, I hear something or whatever, and I can go down there and flash that light right down. We look right over, because the house is up on a hill, right over our garden. And so I can get that 1 million candle power light and shine it down there and see if there's anything that's has infiltrated my perimeter and possibly take them out if they're down there. But the pie pans last night, every night so far, last couple of nights we had the scarecrows up, and there's been a slight breeze, and the pie pans are just, you know, waving in the wind, hitting each other, cling, 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 and no evidence at all of any critters down there in the garden. Oh, one more thing I'm going to do, Pat, is that I'm going to put in two more. Right now, we've got the scarecrows, basically. Pardon me. We got the scarecrows on opposite sides. Picture a rectangle. Right now, I installed the sleeves that the scarecrow poles slide down into, going north and south. What I'm going to do is I've got two more pieces of PVC pipe, 3 inches round. I'm going to cut it in half and then bury those 2 to 3 feet in the ground. And then I will, about once a week, every 5 days, once a week, I'm going to pull the scarecrow out of the current ones and then place them in the other two. So I basically have scarecrows going east-west and then north, east and west and north and south, because if you don't change those scarecrows, preferably about once a week, the deer will actually get used to them mm-hmm. being a stationary object, and then it won't matter much. They'll get used to them being there and say, oh, okay, that's been there for a long time. That's not going to bother me. And so by moving them once a week, it gives you just enough edge over the deer. So they say even with the night eyes lights that people have to deter predators, they recommend even moving those occasionally so that, especially if you're trying to deter deer, so they don't say, oh, that light's there flashing all the time, so it must not be anything to worry about. I'm going to head on over there and investigate because it's been there for forever. So by moving those scarecrows about once a week, they'll be moved just enough to hopefully keep the deer on edge from coming in and eating my crop.
Now, Whisper, did you use the Night Guard solar for as little eyeballs for the scarecrows to really blink at people, blink at the predators or the deer? That'd scare me away.
Nope, I've actually contacted. In fact, there's a new company out called Night Eyes, and they've got that's kind of like the Night Guard, but it's basically works the same way. It's solar, but it's got two LED lights on it instead of just one. And I actually sent them an email on Friday. I'll probably follow it up with another email, maybe even a phone call today, and I'm going to see if they would be willing to donate some product. and then we thought we won't do it as eyes on the scarecrows, but we will if we get some, we'll mount those on a piece of wood or a stake or something and put those pointing outward around the perimeter of the garden. So we're going to see if we can't get some of those Night Eyes solar light systems and just try it. If not, then the scarecrows and the pie pans clanging together. And that's what Grandma used. She used a scarecrow or maybe even just a stick hammered into the ground with some pie pans tied to it. And of course, I know about the CDs. I think Fiona talked about the CDs but we know about mounting old Vanilla Ice CDs on sticks and have them hang to reflect light and move around a little bit. So that's one way to deter flying predators, too, maybe from your chicken coop or your chicken area, like hawks and owls, to hang some CDs that will move around and reflect into the sun. But it was an awesome, awesome weekend, and glad to be here. We've got another great Monday. I know Mondays are kind of ho-hum, but for a minute, Pat, I've talked about my weekend. Tell us about the Mother Earth News Fair in Pennsylvania. How did it go? How many people did turn out? How many people took your seminars there? And tell me what kind of fun you had.
Well, it was quite a time. But first, did you name your scarecrows?
Yes, it's Henry and Ernest.
Henry and Ernest. So you don't have a female scarecrow, huh?
No.
Henry and Ernest. Now, how did you come up with Henry and Ernest?
Well, that's really a short story. I was going to say most people say, "Well, that's a long story." There's two gentlemen in the city of Ideal, and Ernest and Henry, and I know them, we just as we were building them, we had two scarecrows, and it was just something that came to mind. I said, "I'm going to name them Ernest and Henry." And Ernest and Henry have done a little bit of work for me around the homestead before, so I just thought it was appropriate. So that's the names that came to me, Ernest and Henry.
You're starting a new diplomatic trend, I'm sure, which is to name your scarecrows after people you want to honor. We start about naming chickens, you know, after relatives or people that we want to schmooze.
I don't know if it was honoring them or kind of poking fun at them. I think it was on our end more of a poking fun at them than honoring them. But
poking fun.
Yeah, so we were poking.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
Honoring. So anyway, and then of course other names were mentioned about people that were around. Said, "You best not name your scarecrows this or that because they're too lazy to work. So you don't want to name them that, and you don't want to name your scarecrows after this person because that scarecrow might steal all your crops, and you don't want to name your scarecrow after this person because." It is so funny, some of the names we were coming up with and the advantages and disadvantages of naming them that. So I did ask Jen, and our neighbor asked Jen if she had an old denim skirt that we could make a female scarecrowette or something.
Crowette, yes. It's much more realistic. Since so many of the gardeners are women, you know, scarecrowettes.
Crowette, yeah. But,
with the bonnets.
Had one, but... Yeah, so they're asking if I got a nap. Nope, I didn't get a nap in. Nope, I'm not a napper. Y'all know that. Your long-time listeners know that I'm not a napper. I lay down to maybe take a nap, and I'm thinking, God, I could be doing this. I could be doing that. I could be doing this. This is so unproductive. I can't take a nap. So, no, I'm just not a big fan of naps. Jen, yeah, I've already yawned twice in the radio show today. So, but tell us about the Mother Earth News Fair, Pat.
Well, the Mother Earth News Fair was quite remarkable. They estimate there was about 10,000 people the first day, I think, and they had, besides all the indoor conferences, they had about six tents outdoors where lectures were, and the list of presenters, I mean, really, really quite an honorable and a who's who kind of list, just went on and on and on, and it was everything about sustainable living. Oh, Whisper, there must have been easily, I would guess, nine poultry workshops, maybe more, that
wow.
had dealt in one way with poultry or another. And the interest in backyard poultry continues to explode, as we know. I mean, those workshops were packed, and often it was only standing room only. which is great because the interest in so many of them were just, I mean, people were just so earnestly there with all kinds of questions, and it was just absolutely fabulous and heartwarming to see that the backyard movement and the family flocks is proceeding, if not anything, gaining momentum. So that's great. Harvey gave three workshops, and his book sold out, his new book, The Small Scale Poultry Flock. He's here driving, helping me go on here. So he sold out on that, and it's a beautiful book. It's four color, glossy pages, just loaded with information. And I sold a bunch of books. More, it was pretty interesting how people will see a book, and then after about they see it six or seven times, then they'll buy it. And so what happens is they'll eventually come forward and buy it either off Amazon. And you'll find out this too at Whisper when you go to – you'll give a talk or go and you'll think, oh, gosh, I didn't sell too many books, and then the Amazon sales will really spike up the next week.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, of course, you'll sell out too, I'm sure, no doubt. But I took Oprah Winfrey. She is now truly a chicken celebrity. She didn't miss a beat. I mean, there was one talk where I gave there was a rock band playing next door, and I couldn't get the screen to show up very well. And people were literally 160 degrees around me because there wasn't enough seating. It was in one of the outdoor tents, and so there. And I had a little headset speaker on. This was for the chicken whispering workshop, and so they couldn't see the slide. So I took Oprah out and had her demonstrate hanging upside down and sitting on the arm and how to get her calm and holding her up and even exercising with your chicken. And she was unflappable, pretty much. She did just she even got tied up in my name tag one time and then just kind of, you know, kept her balance, flapped a little bit, but kept it in stride. So she got so exhausted, though, God bless her. She literally was falling asleep on my arm. I mean, people would be petting her, and she'd just close her eyes and put her head down. So on the second day, I put her in the speaker's room with her little cage with a towel over it just to give her a little nappy and get some coffee, you know, kind of take a kick back, put her feet up. But it was a great show. I mean, just had a wonderful time. The American Livestock Breeds Conservancy had a booth there, and the interest in that organization is spiking as well. Certainly they had a bunch of heritage breeds there of all breeds, sheep and cows and goats and llamas. I mean, it was quite an event with the livestock, heritage chickens of Buckeyes. They had some Javas, Brahmas, Buttercups, pencil-laced Wyandottes. And it's amazing, Whisper, how many people at the show had never touched a chicken before. So it was able to actually be a hands-on show. So it was great. I had a wonderful time. Wish you'd been there. Maybe one of these days we can do one of these shows together and have a booth.
Yeah, you never know. You never know
you
what
never
may
know.
Happen. You never know. You never know. Absolutely.
You never know. Yep. The things just keep happening and happening, and we're in the flow is all I can say. We're both in the flow here. So that's sort of a basic snapshot. The food was incredible. I totally went off my normal regime, so I'm going to have to, I think, cut back this next week and get back on my exercise program. But it was wonderful. It was absolutely great. I'm ready for a big nappy myself. Because it really is exhausting. The constant stimulation just kind of wipes me out. I mean, I'm not even used to watching TV, you know, much less all that buzz and buzz that's the ambient noise that's around. But it was great. I highly recommend it. And I believe they'll be giving it at the same place, Seven Springs, Pennsylvania, next year, the Seven Springs Resort. So in a nutshell, that's pretty much it. Had a great time, laughed a lot, made wonderful contacts, met a lot of people that I just knew but hadn't met face-to-face and was able to shake their hand, and that's always a treat. Tons of magic moments. Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome. I feel honored to have been invited to come there. It was really a wonderful thing. So that's kind of my weekend. I'm going to head back and unpack and pick up my pieces and make up for the weekend a little bit. Yeah, think I'm going to even take a sauna this afternoon and just really chill out in many ways.
Yeah, go home, take a sauna, take a siesta, chill out, hang out, and just have a really, really
spend time
veg
with
out.
My fur and feather family. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Sounds like a plan. Hey, do you by chance know tomorrow Christine Heinrich is supposed to be here and with the Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities? Yes.
I tell you, I have it on my computer, but I don't have it on, so
yeah, that's
I will
fine.
Email
that's
that
fine.
To you.
That sounds great, yep. And we can post that on our Facebook page so we can get people who may be interested in that. So very good. All righty, we're going to take a break. Looks like we've got Peter Brown is on the line, so we'll take a commercial break. When we come back, we will welcome Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, and we've got some good topics for you today. And we will be back right after this short break. Thanks for staying tuned.
Looking for an all-natural way to keep your flock healthy from intestinal parasites? Tired of wasting all those eggs due to a long withdrawal period? The answer is Vermex. With no artificial chemicals, Vermex has been a huge success for many species, offering a completely natural way to address intestinal hygiene control and improve general health. Check out the online store at www.vermexusa.com. VermexUSA.com to see what products you need to keep your animals healthy. Vermex, natural control of intestinal parasites.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Designed for starting and growing game birds, turkeys, ducks, geese, and broilers, ManaPro's Game Bird Showbird Crumbles feature 24% protein and a combination of vitamins, minerals, and yeast culture. This complete feed does it all from growth and weight gain to healthy development and even improved digestion. So next time you're starting some new birds, try ManaPro's Game Bird Showbird formula and see the difference.
Hey ladies, do you have a...
If you're looking for a unique gift idea for that dog, cat, horse, or chicken lover, then look no further than HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a wide selection of gifts for both the home and farm. My favorite is the chicken noodle soup with noodles shaped like chickens. I'm sure you'll find everything you're looking for at HobbyHillFarm.com. That's HobbyHillFarm.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is Monday, and you know what that means. Every single Monday, we welcome Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. You can visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com for all of your chicken supply needs and, of course, other critters as well. And we'll just go to the phone lines right now and bring on our good friend, Peter Brown. Hey, Peter, welcome back to the show.
Afternoon, Andy. How are you doing?
I am finer than frog hair split four ways.
is Pat on the line as well?
Yes.
Yes, hey, Peter, welcome. So glad you're here.
Good. Andy, I would suspect that you probably need a good bath from all of the plowing you've been doing.
Oh man, it was quite dusty. Thank goodness we got the rain, but yeah, it's and it was funny. You could and good old Brighton, he was out there right in the mix of it and raking our rows back over after we had dropped the seeds down in there, and he needed a good shower too. He was starting to have rings on his where his skin was exposed and a coating of dust over our shoes and whatnot. So yeah, it was definitely a bath was welcome to all that worked in the garden. That is absolutely for sure.
I saw your pictures of your scarecrows. It'd be interesting to see if they're scary enough.
I hope so. Yeah, they, I couldn't. Well, part of me wanted to take borrow Jesse with Midbird and have him impose and
have him impose your face on the scarecrows.
Either have Jesse stand out there on the pole or superimpose his face over the jack-o'-lantern and then I wouldn't have any problem with critters or anything coming on my properties.
Now, Pat, you ran into Harvey Usry, did you?
Well, I'm sitting right next to him. He's driving my Prius as we're tootling down the interstate. We're just going into West Virginia right now.
Oh,
yeah, so Harvey's right here. You want to say hi to him?
No, just say hello. I remember Harvey and I did a seminar over in Warrenton about 4 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, and for the PFAL Association. It's out of Texas.
Okay.
And, Harvey has some great things that he does, and it just amazes me that he's able to do all of the things on his farm pretty much, I guess, by himself, maybe him and his wife. I can't remember. It's been that far back. But sustainable living, there's no question. He's the person to go to.
Yes, he is. Very much a leader in the sustainable living brigade, guess you'd say.
I was very impressed with what he had to say and what he was able to accomplish. Now, you know, it's one thing to say it.
That's
right. But
it's
another thing to live it and do it. And, you know, from growing his own worms and having his birds temporarily penned up in his used-up garden and have them cultivated for him, to all the other things that he was doing, making his own feed and grinding his own feed and what have you, pretty impressive overall. Because, I mean, the amount of work that it takes and the dedication to do that is quite large.
Yeah, he definitely walks his talk, and that's the nice thing about his book is it's written from first person, dirt under the fingernails experience.
Yep,
and a lot of books aren't, but Harvey's definitely is.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Peter Brown says hi to you. He's going back.
He probably doesn't even remember. I do. I was impressed.
Nodding his head.
whereabouts are you in West Virginia? I was over there this weekend myself.
Okay, well, we just crossed into the West Virginia. It's just a short way that the Interstate 81 goes through Virginia. It's only about 20 miles or so. So we're headed south.
We were out in the extreme, well, not extreme, well, yeah, extreme western, but southern West Virginia, down around Ripley, about maybe half hour, 45 minutes south of Route 50.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And about a good 9-hour drive for me.
Yeah, and, that's a good full day's drive, isn't it?
Yeah, we got in about midnight last night ourselves, so a little bleary-eyed. But at any rate, I was going to try to finish up on malaria. We pretty much got it done last time, but we really didn't talk about the what you can do for it and how you go about diagnosing it and that type of thing. So basically what people need to know is that it does exist. It is a problem from time to time. It is, for whatever the reason, seems to be more of a problem in pigeons. I have a fellow that I've got a call back yet today. Seems like he may have a problem with malaria in his pigeons. We don't always see necessarily all of the symptoms that we went over the last time, but generally what you will see is birds that are not looking their best, depressed, weakness, in severe cases, some ocular bleeding, and that kind of thing. So the shaking that we were talking about last week, too, comes from central nervous system damage. We get the capillary blood vessels clogged up with cellular debris from the bursting of red blood cells. You have to understand that this is a disease. That's where it hangs out. Once it gets into the red blood cells, it causes them to rupture. So, and again, the spread of it basically by mosquitoes. You know, we've talked about it before. You know, what can you do to keep mosquitoes away? Just go through that it's pretty self-explanatory. You know, wet grass is a good place for them, and we've in certain areas of the country. I know over in West Virginia, it rained pretty hard on and off all weekend. In my area, it's been raining for the last 4 or 5 days on and off. Sometimes, you know, torrential downpours, other times misting, other times not. And all of this lends itself to greater mosquito populations, greater places for them to breed. Bear in mind, they generally do not breed and hang out in the fresh water. They look for the brackish, dirty water. So, you know, overturning any buckets that are laying around, any old tires, any mud puddles that stand for 4 or 5 days, might do better to push the water out of them or fill the hole up so the water doesn't puddle. Keeping grass trimmed, cut short. No weeds around the chicken house. Places for them to hang out and give them a reason to be there. One of the other things when we talk about, you know, natural things and so on, I'm a big fan of the mosquito barrier garlic-based product. I've said it before to people. You can go online. You can Google it. You can get it. It's relatively inexpensive. And, you know, it won't harm, you know, it's because it's garlic and it's all natural product. Basically, you're not going to harm anything, fish or otherwise. So I would suggest, you know, looking at those kinds of things. They have all of the directions and all of the different insects that it will repel, including deer and geese and so on. So that is a good deterrent for your mosquitoes. But there's a lot of things you can do to keep the mosquitoes around and keep them away from your place. If you keep them away from your chickens, guess what? There's a benefit for you because they don't bother you either. And
right.
So there's a few things you can do there. Almost impossible. You know, I've seen people say, well, you know, put screening up. I don't know many people that have chickens where they're going to keep them in 24/7 and put up screening to keep out the mosquitoes. So other things you can do, you can put some Vetrex on the birds' heads that'll help keep them off of the areas that are most vulnerable. Putting some garlic juice directly on the birds' heads from just cloves of garlic that you will crush can be effective as well. And it is the sulfur in the garlic that the mosquitoes don't like. So that's what you're basically after. Then after you're done crushing the garlic, you can let the chickens eat it. That's just fine. So
oh wow!
It has a good purpose and a place in this kind of a situation. Where in certain parts of the country we are definitely in a mode of mosquitoes being prevalent all around. With cold weather coming, we'll see less and less of them, but they are still around. Mosquitoes don't need any temperature above freezing for a mosquito to survive in. These are places where you'll find them. That's why you'll see on a winter day when the temperature gets up into the 70s on occasion in certain areas of the country, you'll see the mosquitoes come out, and they'll be there. So that's one thing you can do to lessen any kind of problem, whether it be the West Nile virus, whether it be a malaria or any other mosquito-borne virus, pox of chickens being another one. So, again, basically spread by several different species of mosquitoes. The chicken malaria is not transmittable to humans and vice versa, so you don't have to really worry about that aspect of it. Getting a laboratory diagnosis is about the only true way you will be able to get this done, and then it takes a specific laboratory that has been familiar with how to tell the difference between one species of malaria and another, or even to identify it in the first place. So not every laboratory can do it. If you suspect it as being a possibility of a problem with a chicken or chickens within your flock or pigeons within your loft, I would call my local diagnostic laboratory and ask them if they've ever done it. If not, I would maybe call my local health department and see if they had any input into it. But
Peter, I've got a quick question then. Mm-hmm. Is it a blood smear? Can you do a malaria diagnosis just with a good microscope and a blood smear and see the?
Being honest, as I always am with this stuff, I've never done it myself, but I know it does take a specific stain to see a specific portion of the organism. So. My guess uh-huh. that just doing a blood smear may not be sufficient enough. Okay.
Another question, Peter. How prevalent is it really? I mean, mosquitoes are everywhere, and do we have it more prevalent here in the U.S. or in certain parts, or is this something that's just endemic? It's everywhere.
Your tropical regions, Florida, big problems with mosquitoes in Florida, as you might suspect. With all of the marshland and all of the wetlands and so on that they have there. But it is more of a problem in those particular areas. Your more tropical regions have more of a tendency to see a problem with this. But in my reading and stuff, there seems to be more of a problem now with in areas of Texas and places like that with malaria, Mexico, and even dengue fever and those kind of things seem to be making their way around and mosquitoes. How bad a problem it is in those particular areas, I don't know.
Well, how about in third world countries, Peter? I mean, are there chickens that have been evolved with it? I think we asked this a little bit the last time, but do you know if there are any breeds that have a sort of a evolutionary protection against chicken malaria?
In actuality, the answer to the question is yes and no. The actual having a bird, whether it be a pigeon or a chicken, come down with this depends on the microbial load on the bird itself. In other words, the worse the infection and the more of the protozoa that causes malaria that the bird has, the worse the symptomology will be. So in other words, a very mild infection may go unnoticed. But a severe infection, a bird that has been bitten maybe multiple times, let's say, or had mosquitoes that fed on it on the bird for a long period of time, having the mosquito being infected and transferring through the saliva of the mosquito to the bird into its bloodstream, the greater that protozoal load in the bloodstream leads to a greater degree of the symptoms that we talked about, the ocular bleeding and those kinds of things. So a mild infection may just go unnoticed, no harm, no foul, so to speak, no pun intended. But it is based on the microbial load within the bird. So a bird that is bitten by a mosquito maybe one time and have been allowed to feed on that bird for an inordinate amount of time, no big deal. Other birds multiple mosquitoes, similar to the same thing, you know, with a bee sting. You know, one or two bee stings, most people don't have any big deal with it, but, you know, getting hundreds and hundreds of them on you, and you're probably, you know, going to be in deep trouble. Same type of a scenario here where it is the microbial load that determines how bad the disease will be. And once it goes into the bloodstream and starts attacking the major organs and stuff, then you start looking at organ failure. Okay. It is, and I would venture to say, probably stick my neck out here just a little bit, but on the human side and on the animal side, the initial disease outright itself being diagnosed with it is not generally the thing that ends up killing the animal or human. It's the secondary problems, the organ failure that's caused by the disease, but the disease itself is, if you know what I'm saying, just being... cancer doesn't always, in and of itself, kill a person. It's the organ failure, the metastasizing of cancer to the brain and stuff is what does a person in more so than the multiple organ failure and so on and so forth. So all of those things, respiratory infections. When you start looking at CRD, it isn't the CRD directly itself that may kill a bird. Very rarely does. It's the secondary bacterial infection of E. coli and then causing chronic respiratory disease that will do the bird in, because E. coli, being so so aggressive in most cases, becomes systemic in and of itself, whereas the mycoplasma organism will stick pretty much to the surface tissue of the lungs and the trachea and that kind of thing, whereas the E. coli will become systemic throughout the body. I was actually going to talk a little bit about that, but not on a CRD basis per se, but looking at different gut infections, because we've been seeing a lot of that more now. As we see more and more of the rain and stuff persisting in certain areas, we start seeing more and more problems with intestinal problems and that kind of stuff. So it isn't always the invading organism that does the bird in. It starts the ball rolling. AIDS per se does not kill human beings directly. Okay, it is the inability of the immune system then to mount a good attack from all of the other things, and a lot of people with AIDS that is left unattended end up dying from bacterial, fungal, and viral infections that their immune system just can't handle. So it isn't, you know, they weren't killed by the AIDS virus. They were killed by the secondary problems that the AIDS virus allows to develop.
Right, right. Now, another quick question, Peter. That was excellent, by the way. Thank you for that explanation. But do chickens eat mosquitoes and mosquito larvae? I know guineas will snap them out of the air, and I've seen chickens kind of sometimes nail one or two. But are they? Are the chickens themselves a good vector interrupter for those for mosquitoes?
I would say that yes. The answer is probably yes. I too have seen chickens. You know, I've seen them chase butterflies. I've seen them chase moths. I've seen them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't say directly that I've seen them do it with a mosquito, but they are inquisitive. All you have to do one time, and I've done this zillions of times just for laughs because I think it's funny, but if you take your keys over a box full of biddies and just shake your keys, they all come running from every corner of the box, see what the
right.
hell is going on. You know, uh-huh. and they peck at the keys and everything else, and so they are very inquisitive, kind of like you could very easily, so to speak, lead them to slaughter without too much difficulty. They'd all jump off the cliff if you held the keys out in front of them, unbeknownst to them. You know, so they are that way. They are inquisitive. Their eyes, they're able to pick up things very quickly, and that's why their head darts from left to right, up and down all the time as they see something. So, yeah, I don't see it as being something that they wouldn't do. It would be something that they, a guinea might be quicker, you know,
uh-huh.
and eat more of them out of the air than a chicken would. But
guineas, I guess they might be a little quicker on mosquitoes than chickens. But
yeah, but I see chickens doing this. I have not known too many things that a chicken wouldn't eat for the most part. You know,
that's true.
You know, and you know, any animal that's capable of just eating its own droppings, you know, willy nilly, yeah. I think that just pretty much eat anything. And as we know, and we've discussed on this show, chickens don't always eat things that are good for them. Just because they ate it doesn't mean it's good, and doesn't mean it can't be detrimental to their health. So, without getting into another subject for another day, you know, just in a thing of worms. While earthworms may be very tasty to them for whatever reason, or they eat them just because they wiggle, not nearly a good deal. Snails either, you know. So, I mean,
uh-huh.
you could go on with a list of
mm-hmm.
things that they shouldn't probably eat, but they do. You know, a bird filling itself up on crickets, which I have seen, okay, more
mm-hmm.
than once, is not really good. They don't digest well. They don't move out of the crop well. Can cause bird to become crop bound and so on. So it just depends
crickets
on what it is.
Crickets can cause a bird to become crop bound? Is that what you just said?
For crickets?
Eating too many crickets?
Well, yeah,
just
think about it. The body's hard. It's not soft. No digestion takes place in the crop at all. So unless it's going to sit in there and rot and break down and be fed to the proventriculus, which is the true stomach, okay, we talked about that when we talked about the digestive system and went over
uh-huh.
all those things, before it makes its way to the crop, it's got a long distance to the gizzard, rather, where it would be ground up and passed down through the intestine. It's got a long way to go. I mean, I had a client here not too long ago who had a bird that was crop bound and didn't realize that eating a small mouse was not a good thing.
Oh my!
You know, and yeah, the flesh will break down, but be a while before the bones are going to break down. And the bird was eating, not eating, eating, not eating, and you know, it wasn't until after I was spending, you know, not every minute of every day, but 2 weeks of trying to manipulate this crop to digest or move food through the digestive tract, did I find out that the bird had consumed a mouse.
And how did you find that out?
Well,
the person
finally told me. I said, yeah, I don't understand this. We've done everything under the sun, and certain things we can get to move through and other things we can't. You know, what's up with that? And he said, well, do you think eating a mouse might have been? I said, geez, yeah, I think so.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And, it was funny on one hand, but not so funny on the other hand, but we got it straightened out. And the way we did that is we filled the crop up with water, And we just turned the bird upside down multiple times and milked out whatever bones would come out. And to my knowledge right now, everything is, you know, everything's fine.
So but, the mouse bones actually came out of the crop and then
that's right.
It was okay.
That's right.
Ooh.
So, you know, just bear in mind, you know, eating coarse grass, very coarse grass, has a tendency to want to roll itself up in the crop, and it doesn't digest, so it sits there. And once it blocks the opening to the intestine, nothing's going to move through. So that's part of that particular problem. But so there's a number of things, you know, that can cause that particular a problem in birds. And but the treatments for malaria. Let me go back to one thing. The diagnosis through a laboratory, and they use a particular stain called Wright's stain. This particular stain is able to pick up certain parts of the organism will stain with this Wright's stain, and then it'll be able to see it under a microscope and identify it that way. The treatment for it, should it be required, is the same as we would use in pigeons, the same as we would use in humans. These would be human-based anti-malarial drugs. Chloroquine is one. Quinacrine is another. And sometimes they will mix a couple of these together because one by itself may or may not do the job. Primaquine is another. So there's two or three. And there may be more of them on the market today. I haven't really followed it that close, but these are from some notes that I had made a long time ago. Because I deal with a lot of folks that have pigeons and racing pigeons and just fancy pigeons and stuff, and they have run into this quite often.
Wow. Now, Peter, the dosage for people of chloroquine, quinacrine, or even primaquine is a long-term dose.
Yeah.
Is it the same thing for chickens or pigeons? Is it a long-term treatment?
Yeah. Well, not as long as humans. We seem to in most cases, to get past it in anywhere from 5 to 7 to 10 days seems to do the trick, and that may be based on body size. And it also is based on how far along this is. When you get into a situation where a bird is starting to tremble because of central nervous system damage, where the capillary blood vessels leading to the brain and so on and are being clogged with cellular debris from the imploded cells, I don't know if anything is going to help. You know, I had somebody tell me over the weekend when I was at a meeting that they said they use the Indian method. And I said, "What's that?" He said, "An axe." So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
In some cases, that unfortunate as that is, and you all know my position on keeping birds alive, sometimes it just has to come down to that, whether you like it or not.
Man, it's going by so quickly today, and I know we were finishing up with malaria, and we had another topic scheduled too. But you know, we love so much answering questions to some of our callers and folks in the chat room. I know that's you enjoy doing that.
Sure.
Pat and I enjoy doing that. So let me go ahead and tell everybody that's on hold or that has called in to go ahead and press 1, because I know apparently we have some people that have called in that are wanting to talk to you or ask a question.
Sure.
And so what I want you to do is just if you're calling in to talk with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, and you have a question specifically or a couple of questions specifically for him, if you'll press 1 and you'll hear the young lady say you are now in the host queue. Once you press 1, and that's what you want to do if you have a question for Peter Brown. If you're listening and don't have internet or chat and you want to or you don't know the number to call in, 347-637-3237, 347-637-3237 is the number to call in to ask your – we also have had several questions in the chat room that I want to get to as well, so go to our callers first. We have a caller calling in from area code 706. You're on the air with Andy, Pat, and Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. State your name and tell us where you're calling from, please.
My name is Anna Siegler.
Hi, Anna. Thank you very much for tuning in today.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me. And thank you, Dr. Brown, for taking our calls.
Sure.
I spoke with you, I'd written you a, a question. A couple of weeks ago, I have a Rhode Island Red. He's 7.5 years old. He is blind in one eye, cross-beaked. So I hand feed him. Well, I was feeding him twice a day, but since all this has happened, I feed him more than that. He had two girlfriends. They didn't see the weakness in him, but they both died. And he was really depressed last summer, so I got him two more hens for Christmas last year. And I guess they saw his weakness, and they started pecking his bad eye and pecking out his feathers, and it's gotten infected. And you had told me at that time that I needed to get him. I have him on a topical antibiotic. Is it Muricin, M-U-R-I-C-I-N? And you told me I needed to get him on an oral antibiotic. Well, the very next day, he had a third seizure, and it was really, really severe. So I carried him to the vet, and that's when I got him on the oral antibiotic. And he had another seizure yesterday, but it didn't last as long as the third seizure. I'm just wondering if it's still going to take time for the oral antibiotic or if there's something else I could do. I publish a medical magazine, and I've got a guy that does compounding. So if there's something you could tell me that I could get my vet to give, you know, to the compounder to make something up for Sista, I could do that.
Well, where are you in relation to the eye infection? Let's start there. Has that been cured? I would think, you know, at this point in time, if it was started, what did you say, a week or two ago, by now I would hope that the eye infection, even in his bad eye, would have recovered by now. So what is the status of that?
It looks to me like it's cleared up, but I'm still putting the topical antibiotic on his eye.
Okay.
And I'm giving him, you know,
again, putting it directly into the eye?
I'm sorry, what, Neil?
Are you putting that directly into the eye?
I am.
Okay.
I didn't. See, this has been going on a good month, and I was thinking, how long do Rhode Island Reds live? Do you know?
It's not really breed-related. It's how well they were treated in between, kind of like humans. How long do humans live? Well, some of us live longer than others, and a lot of it has to do with, you know, somewhat with genetics, but also has to do with what we've consumed. Some people, you know, will kill their dogs and their birds with kindness by too many treats and that kind of thing. So if he's, you know, it just depends. Live a long time. I've seen, you know, I've seen birds in excess of 12 years of age, 14, 15 years of age. Just depends.
Great. Well, see, he was sleeping a lot. When the girls pecked his eye, naturally I got rid of them, and I got him on the topical antibiotic, and I didn't realize to put it inside of his eye. I was putting it on top. Then over time, a pus gathered in his eye, but I just thought it was really kind of on the outside, and I would try to wipe it clean, but it wouldn't come out. I carried him back to the vet, and it was actually a hard infection in there, and the vet had to actually pull it out, and he said, Anna, you have got to put the antibiotic, the topical, inside of his eye. So then another 2 weeks went by, because he was sleeping a lot, and I spoke with you in the meantime, and you said you've got to get him an oral antibiotic. Well, on that Tuesday, is after I spoke with you on a Monday, is when he had light seizures, but he had a really bad seizure, and I thought I lost him. And it seemed like it. They say it doesn't last 30 minutes, but I can tell you, I held him in my arms for 30 minutes because he couldn't stand up. And so then that's when I got him on the – I took him to the vet, got him on the oral antibiotic. And at this point, his eye looks clear.
What kind of oral antibiotic is he on?
Orbifloxacin, O-R-B-I-F-L-O-X-A.
It's a sister drug to Baytril. It's what they call a fluoroquinolone, which is the drug classification. Baetrillus enerofloxus, and you've got Orbifloxus in there. It's a dog and cat deal. I don't know.
Correct.
It doesn't come in an injectable. It was made by Shearing Plough. But it's a probably a 22.7 milligram tablet, and I think they're greenish colored, split in the middle. How much is he telling you to give the bird?
I give him, is it 1 millimeter, or it's he showed me on the syringe. I don't give it to him in a pill. It's an oral suspension.
Okay.
Do you need to know? I can go get it.
Well, no. There's a problem here, and that exists, that I am not a veterinarian. He is. So I can't tell you to override anything that he's doing. I can only suggest things to you. Mine is all based on experience, you know, that I've had. Are you using anything? I would continue to converse with your vet on this subject, but I would also, if it appears to be getting better, the eye, as you say, that's a good thing. However long he's told you to give that medication, you should give it. Now, the seizure part of it, are you giving the bird anything for a seizure?
I am not, and that was really sort of my question. I feel like the eye's clearing up, but
okay.
Now I'm worried, and he had told me, let me back up, I will tell you, vets do not know about chickens. We just don't have that many that know about them.
Mm-hmm.
And because I told them, I said, you know, a friend of mine works at an open MRI, I can take him and see, because he said that it could have gone into the infection could have gone into his brain. And he said, you know, we're going to hope it's still behind his ear. And I said, well, I can take him to an open MRI. And, you know, he said, well, I wouldn't know how to read it anyway, Anna. And so they just, you know, they just don't know about chickens.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so I guess
and most people don't. And, you know, I'm not sure that even taking an X-ray is going to tell you what you need to know. But I would think that if I were you, I would ask him to give you something to control the seizures.
Okay.
I can't see any reason why. How much does the bird weigh?
About
roughly?
9 pounds. He was 9.5,
okay.
And I don't
so
know.
Okay, so a 9-pound bird. I don't see any problem. If the bird were mine, that's how I have to present this to you. If that bird were mine, I would want to have him have 1/4 of a 1 milligram prednisone tablet per day. And if he tolerates that well, I would probably bump that up to 1/4 of a 1 milligram prednisone tablet per day. That's what I would do if the bird were mine. I cannot stick my nose in where you have a qualified, licensed veterinarian, you know, doing the work. Just can't do that.
I can understand that. I just I feel like you know more than they do.
And that may be, but I don't have the shingle he has. It gives him much more power than I have. But I can only tell you what I would do if that bird were mine. Okay?
Okay.
So I'm not telling you what to do with your bird. I'm telling you what I would do if I were in control of that bird, which I'm not. But I can tell you that legally, from a legal aspect of it, I can say what I would do if the bird were mine, and that's how I approach it.
Okay.
I'm a firm believer, everybody that knows that's ever talked to me, about doing something rather than doing nothing. And that's the approach that I have always taken.
Okay. All right. Well, I went to the compounder to see if there was something that they could do, because they said, they told me I needed to go back to my vet. And so I was waiting to go, because he had the seizure yesterday, and I was going to take him today, but I thought, well, I'm going to wait and talk to Peter. So,
well, here's something else that you can do, and your compounder can probably help you with it, or you can go to the health food store and get it. I am a huge fan of curcumin. That is
curcumin.
Potentiated. That is potentiated with Bioperine. Bioperine is a trade name from a company in New Jersey that has done the research work to show that this extract of black pepper seed does indeed make curcumin and other products absorb better in the intestinal tract. So while most of the work has been done on humans, I have seen products on the animal side with the Bioperine in it. I would not hesitate to give this bird 1,000 milligrams of curcumin potentiated with the Bioperine 4 times a day.
Four times a day.
Yeah, it is a natural anti-inflammatory, as well as other things. So, I mean, you can research it on the net, and you can find out a tremendous amount about the product. But the Bioperine you can do too. It's Bioperine, I believe. But if you Google that, you'll find it. The company's out of New Jersey,
okay.
As far as that's concerned. But you can go to the health food store and get that now, or have your compounder make up some stuff for you. But you don't want just raw turmeric. You want the curcumin, which is part of that.
Okay.
Okay. And that's what I would, you know, that's the route I would take, and I would keep up the antibiotic, whatever your vet is telling you to do. I would follow his lead. I don't know what the dose is that he gave you, but if that were my bird, okay, again, if that were my bird, I would not hesitate to give him a full dose of the orbifloxacin. It's a very good antibiotic, works very, very well. And I have used it before, but what I had was the tablets at the time, and they were 22.7 milligrams. So I would not hesitate to break that up and give that to them twice a day.
Tablets. Okay.
I mean, there are a number of things that can be done. Nasal flushing to get antibiotic directly up into the infraorbital structure and membranes and that kind of thing. So you certainly could do that. You know, and he could either instruct you on that or you can email me and I'll send you the directions on how to do that.
Okay. It is one milliliter, would that be it?
One
ml.
Okay. See, I don't know how strong it is, whatever he's giving you, so I can't see, that's why I can't, that's only one of the reasons why I can't stick my nose in, you follow me?
Yeah.
It's not good to do those things. It's just... You know, he's there, I'm not. He's seen the bird, I have not. You know, he's made a diagnosis based on what he saw, and he's advising you as to what to do. And from that standpoint, I don't want to stick my nose in. But on the flip side of that, I can say what I would do if the bird were mine, and I've told you what I would do.
Okay. I greatly appreciate it.
Okay, if you decide to do the nasal flushing, shoot me an email. I'll shoot the directions back to you.
That's great. Your email?
It's chicken, chickendr, and then the @, and then first, just like it sounds, spell it out, firststatevetsupply.com.
Okay.
All right?
I'll try anything.
I don't blame you.
Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome.
All righty. Thank you very much, caller. Had a question in the chat room that we want to make sure we get on the air here. I think you've expressed your feelings on this before in the past, but they may not have been listening that day that we had talked about it. What is your opinion on using DE, diatomaceous earth, for either the prevention of or the treatment of internal parasites?
God, we beat that one to death.
Whew. I know, exactly.
Yeah.
We have.
I will say this. I will say this because I know what the research data shows. I don't necessarily buy into the thing about diatomaceous earth that by using it damages mm-hmm. the intestine. It may. I don't have any evidence to show that, and I don't know of anybody that does. And I've contacted several people who deal with poultry and so on as far as they being veterinarians, and they don't have a clue either. Now, I will say this. I do have one veterinarian that I am very close to on a friend basis who has done some of this stuff. There was a project that was being undertaken on a farm locally here where the birds were running loose, cooped up at night, and they just had a real bad worm problem, not only roundworms but other worms as well. So the deal was that they took SPF birds, and for anybody who doesn't know what that means, those are specific pathogen-free birds that are guaranteed by the company that raises them or provides the eggs for them to be free of certain avian pathogens. And those birds were put out as sentinel birds to be in the same place as these other birds, and then they were given the diatomaceous earth at varying dosages, and I am here to tell you that none of those birds were able to survive the natural, and I repeat, natural outbreak of worms within their intestine. It was just horrible. So my guess is, if you don't really have, you've heard me talk about this before. If you don't know what you've had, you don't know what the hell you cured.
Mm-hmm.
And I fly by the seat of my pants on that stuff every day because I can't see people's birds. But we go on symptomology. We go on how things spread, how things look, how long it's been there. That's one of the questions I always ask. Age of a bird, losing weight, all the different questions that you would ask to try to promulgate a reason for saying it's X, Y, Z disease. But in many cases, I don't know either, and neither does anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to go with what you're doing and how that cures the problem that you thought you had. I went back and I said, when we were talking about CRD, all the people that would tell me over the years, I cured it with penicillin. Can't happen. Isn't going to happen. Not in your lifetime, not in mine.
Yep.
Okay? It just doesn't work that way. If it were that simple, the disease would be gone, wouldn't you think?
Exactly.
I mean, seriously. You have to ask yourself, there are things touted around as inexpensive products that cure CRD. Let me tell you, if you can cure it with a $6 or $7 product, then why is the entire world chasing $200 bottles of vaccine, okay, and spending millions upon millions of dollars trying to keep this stuff at bay? It's because you can't do it that easily. If you could, it would be done already.
Good deal.
So diatomaceous earth, if you want me to wrap that up for you, I think if you had a real, real mild infection and your worm load, again, we talk about loading of birds, if it wasn't a big deal on your place, you'll probably never see them. But if you've got a real worm problem, don't look for that stuff to work.
Don't waste your time.
No, not my opinion.
Good.
That's my opinion from what I've seen. And I did see, so I can speak from experience.
Sure.
I did see the intestines of these birds bloated with worms. It looked like you had taken a quarter of a pound of spaghetti, okay, and cooked it and then rolled it and braided it, and that's how bad it was in the gut. These birds just couldn't live. And
amazing.
They were fed the diatomaceous earth every day.
Amazing. Thank you for that. Another question here is that we were talking about pinless peepers for a second. Do they make pinless peepers small enough for quail?
No. When we get into quail, we go into quail bits. It's a U-shaped or a C-shaped clip that goes upside down. And it doesn't invade the nostril either. That's where it's located, but it goes in between the upper mandible and the lower mandible. So the opening goes up. You put it in between the upper and lower mandible. You take a pair of pliers and you just gently squeeze it till it goes into the nostril enough to be held in place, and that keeps them from. They can eat, but they can't pull. Mm-hmm. Okay, they can't pull feathers and because they do a lot of nose picking. I don't mean literally up your nose. After I said that, I thought about it real quick. But in those particular birds, they do that, and it almost doesn't matter how much room you give them. I don't believe it's a room issue. Maybe it is, because it doesn't occur to my knowledge in the wild. But in captivity, quail have a tendency to nose pick, and that's probably what they're trying to prevent them from doing. But they will pick each other to death. They're one of the worst. They're very aggressive that way. But that's generally what we do. Another thing you can do with them is you can round off the front of the beginning of the beak just a little bit. And I know if you're raising thousands of them, it's not a deal that you're going to want to do. But quail bits are available. If somebody has just a few quail and they want to try them, they can shoot me an email. I'll send them a few free to try and see how they like it. That helps them.
All righty, we're going to wrap it up so we can get to our little chicken trivia contest today. But that's awesome information throughout the entire show from Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. Visit them online. Get in contact with him at firststatevetsupply.com. And I guess next Monday we'll get into – what was the topic you had sent me?
We're going to go with some intestinal problems.
Yes,
we're going to talk about different things that cause – because I've run into a lot of that recently with the wet weather. Coccidiosis being one. So we'll get a general review of that. We'll look at a disease called the Greens. I think people will want to know about that. You know, maybe look at some enteritis and a couple of other things, and whatever call-in questions we've got. If somebody didn't get their question answered that was online or whatever and has a question that they want to ask, just shoot it to my email, and I will try to get to it as quick as I can. It's a short week for me. I'm traveling this week, having traveled this past weekend and now this week as well. I will be gone out of the office Thursday through Sunday. So anybody needs anything from me, you know, information-wise, going to have to get up between now and Wednesday.
All righty. Sounds good. Thanks for that information.
All righty.
And we'll see you next Monday. Safe travels.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All righty. Pat, you're still online, but we're going to go and Pat, you still there with us?
Yes, I am. Well, that was awesome, the whisper, but yes.
That's very good. We've got a chicken trivia question we're going to do, and then we're going to break while people call in. And Pat is en route back from an event that she was at this weekend. Pat, again, is coming back from a particular event she attended this past weekend where she spoke and had a few workshops. And the chicken trivia question today is, what is the name of the event she was attending this weekend, and in what state was that event? What was the name of the event Pat was speaking at, and what is the state located where this event was? And, Pat, you get to pick the caller.
Okay, let's go with caller number six.
Caller number six, and you will win today if you're the right caller and know the answer, a hen saver, hen apron from Crazy K Farm.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must.
You know what? I forgot, if you weren't a regular listener, the number to call in, 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237. And if you're the right caller, you could win this hen saver, hen apron.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Looking for an all-natural way to keep your flock healthy from intestinal parasites? Tired of wasting all those eggs due to a long withdrawal period? The answer is Vermex. With no artificial chemicals, Vermex has been a huge success for many species, offering a completely natural way to address intestinal hygiene control and improve general health. Check out the online store at www.vermexusa.com, V-E-R-M-X-USA.com, to see what products you need to keep your animals healthy. Vermex, natural control of intestinal parasites.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Pat, are you with us?
Yes, indeedy, I'm here.
And you said caller six, is that what you said?
Caller number six, yep.
Okay, let me go down the list here, and away we go. You're live on the air with Andy and Pat. Caller number six, calling in from area code 270. State your name and tell us where you're calling from.
Yes, it's Critter Lover, Suzanne in Paducah.
Yay!
Yay, Critter Lover.
Alrighty. Where is Pat coming from? In what state?
I'm sorry?
What was the event called, and in what state was the event Pat's coming from right now?
The Mother Earth News Fair, and it was Pennsylvania.
That's Absolutely correct. Congratulations. And you know the drill. Just send us over an email with Hen Saver, Hen Apron in the title, and then your name, shipping address, and phone number. And we'll get that out to you as soon as possible. Already, just about 90 seconds, or actually about a minute and 10 seconds left. So I want to thank you very much. Thank Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, for coming on every single Monday and sharing his expertise with all of us. Tomorrow we got Christine Heinrich, author and historian with the SPPA. Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities. Pat, take it away.
Okay, yeah, it was a wonderful show today. I never knew chickens got malaria and learned so much. Thank you, Peter Brown. Appreciation to our chat room chickeneers and, of course, all our listeners for tuning in and clucking along. And, of course, blogtalkradio.com provides our radio, chat, and video services. And you, Andy Schneider, oh, Andy, the Chicken Whisperer, and, of course, the wind under our wings. Thank you for bringing us all together. I'm Pat Forman, and send blessings to all on behalf of all of us. May the flock be with you evermore. God bless everybody.
Oh.